Session number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, Reel 5.
Mr. Ray, Reel 5.
Yes?
Just to finish up with your period with Ains Squad, what about your NCOs, the people who trained you? They were, I believe, Lance Corporal Nicholson and Corporal Davis.
That's right, they were my two.
What were they like as men and as trainers?
Very good. First class.
What methods did they use?
Just the ordinary methods of... what do you mean by the methods?
Well, were they very strict or were they paternalistic? Or how did they approach you?
Well, they were strict on parade, and off parade they're quite easygoing. And the most, they took quite an interest in the squad in general, you know. I couldn't find any fault with the NCOs.
Did they explain things clearly to
you?
Oh,
yes, yes. Everything was clockwork, regimental fashion. They were excellent instructors.
Did they? I mean, there's always a joke about instructors using swearing a lot and insulting you and that.
They never used bad language.
And what about the officers? Did you see many officers?
Well, we had an RSM. He used to watch the parades of different groups, you know, the different squads, and if he wasn't satisfied of any way, which he always was, as a matter of fact, he would give his lectures as well, you know, about war service and what he used to be when he was a young man. And I once asked him a question. He used to say, well, any questions? Any questions you like, and I'll answer them. You know. So I said, "Excuse me, sir. Why does the Durham Light Infantry have a bugle for a cap badge? What's the significance?" And he hummed and hawed, and I don't think he get really down to that question. But because a bugle, it's usually used for signalling. You know what I mean? When a bugle is sound, a sound of a bugle of different calls, it means different things, you see, you know what I mean? But the staff sergeant, you know, the sergeants, the lance sergeants, used to wear a sash and a whistle. That used to be on a green lanyard on through the epaulette, you know, in his breast pocket. So he had the whistle and the bugle during battle. I think that's where it came from myself.
And what about actual officers? Did you say?
Well, we had one officer in charge of the whole of the Fenham Barracks. That was Major VA. He would come down occasionally as well and keep looking around, you know, from his office. He had his office up there, you see, and he had his own quarters well away from the squads, you know. And he's quite a smart chap, very correct in all his methods. The shining example as an officer.
And there were not that he was the only officer you knew there.
Yes.
Now, after the passing out parade, you know, the ceremonial parade, you were posted, weren't you?
Down to Catterick.
And that would be about May?
May. But I couldn't say the exact date, but it was the month of May.
Did you all in your squad go down?
Oh, yes. Yes.
And what unit were you joining there? That was the which battalion?
That was the 1st Battalion.
And what happened on your arrival? How did they fit you into the unit? I mean,
well, everything was more or less cut and dried when we arrived. There were so many to each company. And I went to A company. I think it's about three or four of us went to A company out of the squad. The rest went to B, C, you know. That finished that squad.
And who received you into the company? I mean, who sort of told you where to put your kit and the rest of it?
Well, we went in the barrack room. You had an NCO in the barrack room, you see, and the bed's vacant anyway. So you're allotted the bed. That's yours. And the lockers are all on the wall, everything, you know.
So it was the same as Fenimore?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that was easy to fit in?
Quite easy to fit in.
How did they make you feel welcome, the other ranks, your fellow privates? What were they like?
Well, they were all right. Yeah, here we are. We got the young stuff coming in, you know, because they all thought they were all soldiers, you see. Some of them were, really, because they'd been in quite a long time, in the 1st Battalion. Come on, settle in. You're all right. We'll put you all right. No, don't worry. It's all right down here. It's different to what it was in the training centre in Fenham Barracks. And it was quite easy.
So, what sort of a routine did you settle into then? What would a typical day be like during that period?
Well, we had the usual routine. We had the rally at the same time, and we had breakfast, and we got dressed in fatigue clothing as well. And after a couple of days, we more or less had to have a look around where the naffy was, where the reading room was, where the gymnasium was, and things like that. And we were talking to the company commander, saying that he welcomed us down. And
who was the company commander?
Captain Cousins, then.
And he welcomed you by saying what?
Yes, he said, well, you are young soldiers, and you're amongst old soldiers, and we're quite pleased to have you in my company, and you've been well disciplined, and I hope you keep up the discipline, and I'm pleased to see you, and that's all. I don't want to see any up in front of me on charges. Behave yourselves, you'll be all right. Good morning. Off you went.
So on your typical day with the... Did it differ much from when you were at Fenham?
Oh, quite a lot.
In what way?
Well, there are quite a lot of fatigues to do, you know. We were allotted daily fatigues. And there wasn't so much marching and regimentation as what there was in Fenham Barracks. You know. We had our usual... parades on the parade ground at Mons Lines, quite a lot.
That was the actual barracks were in Mons Lines.
Mons Lines, yes. And the company used to be on parade, you know, for company parade for the company commander, about perhaps once in 3 weeks or once a month. The CO would have the battalion on parade, perhaps once in about 3 or 4 months, everyone, the grand parade with the band and the bugles and everyone assembled. Fatigue parties were detailed each day.
So what might they be for?
Well, there's the officers' mess, sergeant's mess.
What would you do in the messes?
Well, clean it, and generally, you know, polish, clean the floors and do the polishing and especially the cookhouse fatigue, that was a job.
Why?
Spud bashing, peeling potatoes off, barrel loads of potatoes, sitting there with a potato peeler, you know, and talking and having a crack between ourselves in the cookhouse. We always got a cup of tea from the cook sergeant, you know, he'd make us cup of tea, and then you get a break and go to the canteen for a tea and a wad, we used to call it, rock cake, and then go back to the same job. And
so that was mainly it in the cookhouse, peeling the spuds, was it? Or would you be cleaning as well?
Cleaning, oh yes, cleaning greasy pans and different utensils, you know. And
was that difficult because they didn't have all this modern stuff to clean things?
Well, there's plenty of hot water and stuff like that, you know, and soda and stuff, and plenty of dishcloths. It wasn't a hazard, really. It was all right. It was nice and warm in there, especially if it was a cold day outside.
So cookhouse fatigues weren't too bad, really?
No.
What other fatigues might you be on?
Officer's mess. The reading room.
What would that be?
That was the when you would get a break in the reading room, was where you could write letters, read the daily papers and magazines, you see, that was in there.
And what was the fatigue?
Well, polishing the floors, getting all rid of the dust, emptying ashtrays. I think that's about it. Good fatigue.
So that there were more fatigues than there'd been at Fenham then?
Yes, and there used to be a lot. Quite other. There used to be the exchange of laundry, such as sheets and things like that. You used to take the what they call the limber, and the mules used to go up and collect it from the ASA. That was farther up in the garrison, around by the laundry. All that had to be exchanged and bring back and put it in the quartermaster stores. And there used to be a coal fatigue. Used to go down where the railway used to pull in with the wagons of coal. That was a dirty job, that. Shoveling coal out of the truck into the limber, you know, the wagon, and getting that loaded up. And taking it back to the unit, offloading it there. And then there used to be coal fatigues taking it round to married quarters in sort of large buckets with two handles on, a great big round one, you know, two cutting. That was the coal issue.
What about your training? I mean, how was training organised? Because didn't it go from individual to different levels when you were the serving unit?
Well, yeah, you had the training periods. We used to be on the moors. We used to do the yearly exercise, you know, mock battles and that, you know, intercompany, and all the food was taken out there and cooked. Out in the cook wagon, you know, followed up.
And what sort of exercises would you be doing?
The companies used to be divided up. One company would be the enemy, the other company would be the attackers, you know what I mean. And generally a little ground battle, and we would, that would be about 3 or 4 days.
Was it still, what sort of, I mean,
on the moors,
the tactics you'd learned on the sort of the trenches you'd seen, you know, they'd had that trench demonstration you mentioned. Were they still First World War tactics, or were things moving a bit?
Well, in my opinion, it was based on the First World War tactics. And we fired blanks, of course, you know, to... there were thunder flashes and things like that, represented grenades. The mortars didn't fire any blank bombs, anything like that. But the mortar position was in there. They go through the motions, because we had umpires going round. You see, they used to assess firepower, attacks, manoeuvrability in the field, and so forth. A general little battle used to take place on the moors with the battalion, you see. that, I think that's about it. That wraps that one up.
And did you ever work with tanks or ever do any cooperation with the RAF?
Well, we used to the Royal Air Force. It wasn't up to the standard it was in the Second World War proper, you know. They used to have what they call, I think, Rusty Gladiators, and we'd be out. Our company as well. I remember we crossed the River Swale, waded across when it was shallow, you know, there'd been no rainfall, and then suddenly there was an air attack on the crossing, and they came very low, and of course no firing, just to give you the impression of what it was like to be strafed by aircraft, because there's a large aerodrome at Catterick. That was done by two planes, one after the other, and coming very low, you know, and that meant scatter, seek cover, because you'd be strafed from the air.
What about tanks? Did you ever practice working with them? Because it's quite difficult working with tanks.
Well, we did see one or two tanks from the Royal Tank Corps. They used to join in to find out what it was like, especially if the tanks went into attack on a bombardment. We could follow up behind the tanks, you know, and get in after the bombardment.
And you practiced that?
That practiced that, yes.
Did you practice things like artillery formation and open order and various attack things?
No.
What about fire and movement?
That's right. That was the main factor, fire and movement.
How did you go about that then? Or what, did you just explain it for?
Well, the first line, they put in firepower. Second wave went through to secure the ground that was strafed, you know, for an attack, and the rest of the rest would be held in reserve in case the attack didn't come off as it should have done.
Now, while you were at Catterick, did you get any more training in in your weapons? I mean, because you'd had basic training in the rifle and things, but
yes.
You fired your course.
Yes.
Your first course at Catterick, you mentioned that.
Yes.
But did they do things like trying to raise your rate of fire, you know, so you could fire faster? And I mean,
well, you would train rapid fire at the depot, 10 rounds in a minute. That was our rate of fire.
Did they not?
That's with the rifle. That was the rifle.
They didn't try and get you up to 15 then?
I don't think you could get 15. Accurately.
So it was constant.
The basic was 10. That's two clips of 5. And you have to change over from one clip to the other, you know, in a minute, and get them all off and accurate. So you couldn't get it any more than you couldn't get 15. To be accurate, you could try to get 15, but I think the rifle fire would be very spasmodic on a target. You might get two hits out of about 15 if you were lucky.
What about other weapons training? Did you get any more detail about your Catterick?
Well, we had to fire the Lewis gun. We had to be proficient firing the Lewis gun.
What was it like to fire?
Good.
Because you'd done the theory at the depot.
Yes, it was very good.
What did you like about the Lewis?
I liked it. It was good to fire. It was accurate. Apart from the stoppages, which we never encountered many of those because it was tipped up gun. 600 rounds a minute, good fire, good rate of fire, good field of fire, good arc from left to right, and you know, for putting down some good hard solid fire power. It was very heavy. That's what I disliked about it, because carrying a Lewis gun, it took, and you had your equipment. It took a bit of trudging round the moors, you know, and at the double, and getting into position and out of position.
Were the special Lewis gun teams?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Were you in one? Or were
no.
But you all had to go
I could it? Go. I could go in if any in an emergency, because we were trained.
Everyone
number one, oh yes, number one and the number two, and the ammunition man at the back. That was like three men. The gunner, the second man for changing the magazines, and the other one in the rear with the ammunition to come up.
Now, what about, you'd done some hand grenade training, Mills bomb training, with dummies. Did you try any live? Did you get to throw any live ones at Catterick? Practice?
Not particularly. But we knew how we used to do it on a dummy, with the dummy grenades.
Any other developments in the weapons field while you were there? I mean, training?
No, not really in my time. Not,
so it was just more of the same that you'd done
the
at the
same,
depot?
The same routine over and over again.
What about any signal training or scouting, transport, cook, you know, that sort of training? Did you get any of that?
Well, signalling. Flag signalling, you know.
Was that at Catterick then?
Catterick, yes.
What, just flags?
Flags, yes. Well, the signal section, they had the Aldous lamp. They had flags. Of course, they had field phones. They could use Morse code. Taught Morse code. They had the linesman. They had telephonists. That was called intercommunication between one company and the other to the battalion headquarters. We were taught flags as a secondary. It was a secondary.
And what system of flags were you using? Morse or?
Well, there's a name for it, isn't there?
Semaphore.
Semaphore, yes.
And did you all learn that, or yes. Or a bit of it?
Yes, we were taught it. Yes. We had the signal corporal. He taught us a semaphore on the parade ground. He went through the alphabet several times, you know, different positions of the flags for each, represented each letter in the alphabet. And they used to get to send short messages from one to the other.
So that's pretty. And the training, how many hours a day would you spend training? I mean, there were fatigues and there was training. How was the day split up?
Well, training and fatigues, they were tied in together. They were tied in together. That is the fatigue period. Then you had your training period. One was separate from the other. And of course there was guard duties to perform as well, you know.
Well, we haven't done guard duties. I mean, how did you prepare for the guard duty? Were they running the stick system?
We called it the quarter guard. That was the guard, the orderly room. And believe me, there's quite a lot of preparation for that guard.
So that was like you prepared for your special Saturday parades at Fenham, the same sort of detail and shining on.
Yes, but as I explained before, your name came up on the detail board, you know. You had a big detail board in the passage where the company commander had his office. It's a separating passage, you know. Of the men prepared for duties, whether it was fatigues, guard duties, and when your name was on for guard,
that was every day that would come up.
That would be, you not weren't on guard every day. You were picked for a guard duty, perhaps it might be once a month, because the duties were performed by companies. You see, A company, they performed the guards, and then B company would form the guards for each day. There's a guard mounted every day, But as I tried to explain the preparation, there's more preparation for that court guard than there was really in the in Fenham.
Even more than?
Yes, because it was elite, very elite.
So how could you prepare more? What extra work could you do?
First of all, if I on guard duty, you weren't on your own, because when the guard mounted, I'd just put it a little bit forward so you get the picture of what used to happen, because it's a little bit complicated. I was exempt all that day, making preparations for the guard the next morning, which would mount at 9 o'clock in the morning, sharp. That day we'd taken to do all the equipment from top to bottom, seeing that you had a haircut, seeing that everything was, the boots were highly polished. This included your rifle, bayonet scabbard, everything like that. It had to be typical, but you got a lot of help from the old soldiers. They practically, when your uniform was pressed, ironed, creased, put his regulation, and they used to, because the cleanest person on guard used to get called stick orderly for the CO. Still going, and he used to start orderly room duties. But if you, it was quite a good job. They used to take messages from the CO's office, the adjutant's office, to round the companies to stick. Just nice and easy round. That was his duties. So you can imagine the competition. The guard standing on parade. You had the RSM. There's a bugler. You had the guard commander, and the second in command, sergeant or a lance corporal, or a corporal, or a lance corporal. They were the guard commanders. The RSM used to be there on parade. Then the adjutant used to come, and the RSM and the adjutant used to go around having a look at your hat, your haircut, looking at your numerals on your shoulders, taking stock of each one individually, and they'd confer, and then they'd say, right, private so-and-so, wherever it is, fall out. He was a stick man.
And that, how many would there be picked for the guard? He'd be one out of how many?
Five.
So there'd be four on guard and one on this stick duty.
That's right. The one had to be a stick orderly.